The King and I. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, God Unlimited, all sorts of good things here on Campbell, California, bringing you the thought for today. The King and I. A while ago, I was visiting in Nigeria and just having a great old time. And my hosts were taking me around to visit the royalty in every one of the districts, meeting the kings here and the kings there and the king's wives and the king's children and the king's family. Well, there was one king that was the king of their district, that was the king of their area. And he had been a banker, and he'd been quite successful. And then he ran for king. How about that? He ran for king, and he was running for king against another fellow who wanted to be king very much himself. And this fellow wanted to be king so badly, with so much emotion, that when the nation made this fellow the king, the other fellow died. He just was so emotional, he was so eager to have it. When he didn't get it, he just died, you know. And he had no illnesses, he had no problems, he just died. And that was nice. That way they didn't have that confrontation. Because once you're a king forever. And so this king had been aware of being a king. He knew all the king stuff to do. And our friends took us over to meet him, took me over. And we went into his palace. And as we were going into his palace, a man came walking up behind me with a few other people. And I said, we're going into the king's palace. And he said, yes, I know. And I said, would you like to go first? He said, no, you go right ahead. And so I walked first. And when I got in there, I found out this guy was the king. He'd come out of another building behind me, and he was walking up behind me, you know, in a very casual way. And so we went into his chamber, you know, where he does his audiences with people who come to see him. And it was quite a large room, perhaps as big as this part of the house here, and filled with chairs, all big, luxurious, easy chairs and couches. And he had a big chair, and the chair seemed a little bit different, but not too much. And he was a medium-sized man, and his height was from here down rather than from here up, you know, kind of short on the top. And so for him to be at the level of everybody else or a little higher, he had to have a higher seat. Now, maybe the seat was just because he was the king or because he had a short torso. So, but it put him up above everybody else a couple of inches. And so I walked in after we were greeting people, and he sat in his throne chair. And then next to him was another throne chair on either side, and lower. And so I went to the king, and I said, sir, would you mind if I sit in this chair next to you? I can hear you better that way. He said, oh, of course not. Good idea, you know. Good idea. You have come to see me. You don't have to stand across the room genuflecting to me, you know. You know what genuflecting is? Bowing, you know. And so I sat next to him, and we talked. And then his wife came out, the queen, and she was bearing gifts, and she had in this hand a special dish she made just for me of peanut butter. And over in this hand, she had a dish of some kind of nuts.
Cola nuts.
The cola nuts that they give to everybody as a token of goodwill.
Welcome, yeah.
And they taste, what?
Welcome.
A welcome, and they taste terrible. Mm-hmm. They are just too much. Mm-hmm. mean, for someone who's not used to eating a kola nut, they expect you to eat a kola nut. And I said, do you mind if I just pop it out of my pocket? Nope, that's okay. So then I took a cracker and dipped into the peanut butter. And I didn't want to get sick, you know. I didn't know whether my tummy would like a kola nut or not. And I wasn't going to be testing it. So I sat talking to the king, and the king says, I'm so happy you came. I want to tell you our problems. And I said to the king, sir, I did not come here to hear your problems. I came here to hear of the things that are important for you to enjoy. You know, what sort of things you want. He said, what's this? I said, yeah, I have come to hear what you'd like to tell me about your nation, you know, within Nigeria, of what your area, your district wants to accomplish. I said, oh, that's different. And so we talked, and I could hear him very clearly because I was sitting right next to him, you know. And he told me all the things that they wanted to do. And occasionally something negative would slip in, where we can't get this done and we can't get that done and they're not doing this. And I would instantly speak to him and say, sir, I only want to hear your positive things that you want to do. And he took it very well. He took it very well. And we talked for, oh, maybe an hour and a half. And so at the end of the hour and a half, I said, I have a gift for you. He said, what is that? And I said, it's a song that I've been teaching the school children here to sing, which says, I bless Nigeria, land that I love. I stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from within. Ta-da. The whole thing. And he said, wow. And I sang it again in front of his whole entourage, his whole audience there and everything. And I was very good. I was in good voice. And so I sang it. And then Sibyl, our student there, and my hostess and her husband Sam Ganga, and they said, they called him by name, King Ukabagaji, and they said, King, this is how it sounds in dialect. And so they sang it to him in dialect. And he says, wow, we've got to make this our national anthem. And I said, remember, the Queen of England had it first, you know. God bless the Queen, you know. And he said, I don't care. And I said, let me make a suggestion. If your nation is a nation that speaks English as your primary language, then everything you do should be in English. If you have dialects, dialects are that which disperse the people. Dialects do not bring people together. People who speak dialects want to be separate. They want to be different. And if they speak one language, like if the German people all spoke Hochdeutsch, you know, you would have a united Germany. But because they have the various other dialects in there, Bayerisch and what have you, they are separate. Oh, I'm from Bayern, I'm from there, I'm from here. You're from Germany, the fatherland, you know. You're from America. And here in America, everyone speaks English. And there is no other language in America except English. Although some people are trying to put these viruses into the American culture of different languages, which will be beautiful in the Tower of Babel of destroying people on their quest for God. Because the Tower of Babel, the people were trying to climb in this tower to go up and see God face to face, and God just clicked like that, and they all spoke separate languages, and they couldn't communicate with each other, and they went their separate ways. And there was no more unity, no more harmony. And this is what happens in nations, when nations have dialects, and nations have all these, like in Switzerland, you have, 30 cantons, or 28 cantons, and you have 46 dialects. You know, even in several, in the cantons themselves, you have three or four dialects. And then you have three mother cultures. You have German as your mother language, and you have French as a mother language, and you have Italian as a mother language, and what's that other one?
Romansh
as a little stick in their mother language. Mm-hmm. So you got four mother languages, which bastardize you completely, and then you have all the dialects which make you totally immobile to be with each other. Well, anyhow, I explained this to the king, and he says, I never thought of it that way. He said, I go to the legislature, yes, next week. You know, we're having a meeting of the Congress, and I'm going to bring it up. And I'm going to bring it up that we have it only in English, no dialects. Of course, Sybil and Sam were so proud of singing it in dialect and knowing it in dialect. But, you see, that's what it does. It takes you apart. So, as I went to this king, I mean, here I'm just a normal, ordinary, positive thinking person going around the world teaching positive thinking and positive living. And so, I'm in the face of many wonderful people. And as I am there, I share with them unconditional love. And I don't tell them anything they do is bad. I just say everything you do is good. And as I go around visiting my neighbors here, I say to them, everything you do is good. And they sometimes say things that are not nice. And so I immediately just say to them, but you have such a lovely home, such a lovely wife, such a lovely family, such a lovely yard. You know, change the subject from anything that they want to be negative into something that they could see as positive. And so they have only one picture in their mind of me. And that's a picture of being unconditionally loving. You know? And being unconditionally loving is a very important thing to do. Now, each one of you is an unconditional lover. Each one of you has the ability to go out into the world and unconditionally love everybody. Now, I could just look at Gertrude here, and I could say, Gertrude has come here from Switzerland, and Gertrude has a family, and she is doing just great. And Gertrude has done many wonderful things. She's done many wonderful expressions of who and what she is. But the biggest thing she has done is to teach herself who she is. Gertrude is unconditional love. Gertrude falls in love with everybody and everything that she does. And Gertrude loves a challenge. And when we told Gertrude that she should learn computer, she, like most people, said, no way. And within a very short time, she was an expert. We told Gertrude to go learn singing, and she says, no way. And in a short time, she became an operatic star, singing on stage and screen throughout all of Switzerland. And that's no joke. You're with many others too, but you're still singing. And we told her that she has a fabulous granddaughter. And she says, there's a lot of work to be done there. And I said, you have a fabulous granddaughter. And so she picked up the skirt and looked underneath and said, yes, she is a fabulous being, you know. She didn't just look at that outer skimpy garment that she was wearing, as teenagers have a tendency to do, but she looked beyond. And on the story goes with her. Her life is filled with unconditional love. But the biggest thing that makes her unconditional love so really powerful and beneficial is that she first loves herself. Now, this morning I was talking with Ellen about her life and her world and all the things that she has to do. And I said, Ellen, your primary job on planet Earth, just be myself and have fun. I said, yeah, is to be a practitioner. Your primary job on Earth is to be a practitioner. A practitioner sees everybody whole and perfect just like they are. Yeah? Can you do that? See everybody whole and perfect just like you are? Now, That's a wonderful practitioner thing. And this is what I taught to the king. And the king picked it up right away. And he was very eager to do it. And Sibyl and Sam in Nigeria, they picked it up right away. And they're doing it beautifully. Now, many of us are working as practitioners, and we don't see everybody whole and perfect. We see them needing improvement. If we are whole and perfect, like I told Ellen also, I said, Ellen, you are the Mother Superior here in the monastery. And she says, oh. And I said, what is the Mother Superior? Do you remember what I said?
The Lover Superior.
The ultimate lover.
Okay, yeah, we correct.
We corrected it rather than superior, you know.
Yeah.
The ultimate lover.
Yeah.
See, she is the unconditional ultimate lover. And that's her job here, is the unconditional ultimate lover. Nothing more or nothing less. Just the unconditional, sit back please, unconditional lover. Sylvia's so eager to go into town and do her shopping that she can't wait till I finish my talk so she can go. Yeah, yeah, sit back.
Yeah.
Well, don't. Sit back. There's my chair. Sit back.
No.
She's afraid of that chair, Ellen. Stand up, please. Step in front of her. Sit in this chair. And lean back comfortably, Stephen.
Yeah, now he knows it.
No, lean back. Nice, isn't it? Now Sylvia, go sit in Stephen's chair. And that's another point I'd like to make. Today, we're beginning a series of seminars here, which will be 6 days long, 4 lectures each day, and 3 meals each day. And Stephen doesn't have a chance to hold my hand, except when he comes to visit. And neither do the rest of you. But my associates, they're here with me always. And so they always sit on the end of the table. Ingeborg and Ellen and Sylvie, they always sit on the far end of the table from wherever I am, so everybody else can be up here, and I can have the pleasure of your company, you know, sitting close to me. Isn't that nice? Because, you know, I get two, you know, every day, and whoever is first up here and gets there, you know, Ellen says they're making cars, but my associates who are with me all the time, they should be sitting, you know, somewhere else, letting the others. Now, we saw the movie Miracle on 34th Street. And the movie Miracle on 34th Street is where the children are taken to see Santa Claus. And the mother takes the child in to see Santa Claus. Go ahead, talk to Santa Claus. Go ahead, talk to Santa Claus. Now, why doesn't the mother talk to Santa Claus? Because the mother knows Santa Claus. And the mother wants the child to get to know Santa Claus and brings the child in to know. Now, you kids, you're with me always here. So now, everyone else who comes here, let them get to know me a little bit. Maybe they might even like me too. And so let them come in and get to know me, because that's part of the wonderful game. But always remember, you're a practitioner. Nice chair, isn't it? Remember, you're a practitioner. And always remember that you don't need anything. You give everything. And Stephen? What does Stephen say when he faces something that confuses him? Bitte?
Peace.
I know that I know that I know. Ich weiß, dass ich weiß, dass ich weiß. Gott in mir ist die Antwort. Okay, now, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. Now, I expect each one of you, with each of the little challenges you take for yourself, with the swimming pool, with the ozone, with the whatever, with the furnace, you know, whatever you do, I know that I know that I know God and He knows the answer. And then go there, and it'll say, here I am. I was waiting till you could open your eyes. You came up here with your eyes closed. Where's the answer? I don't know, you know. And you're feeling around, and you just never find it. So, This is what life's all about. And this is what the king is all about. Now the king was not against having his entourage back away and letting me sit next to him. But you know what he's doing now? He's keeping those two chairs on either side of him for his guests, his honored guests, so they can talk to him and share with him. Now what a lovely thing, huh? Now, I didn't know I was going to encourage that. I didn't know that I was going to teach him something, but it's done all the time. When you are unconditional love, those things always work. So, my friends, have a lovely day, and know that when you listen to Thought for Today, you never know what's going to come your way. And know that I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.